Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, 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 friend. Welcome to the Renaissance English History Podcast, a part of the Agora Podcast Network and the original Tudor Podcast, podcasting Tudor England since 2009. This is episode 231, I believe. We are talking about women's education, literacy, and role in religion because it is still Women's History Month. So we are still talking about all things related to women. And we're going to be talking a lot about the seismic shifts brought about by the Protestant Reformation on women's education, literacy, and their roles within the sphere of religion. It's looking at this intersection where the Reformation hits women's history. Super cool. But first, a thank you to all of the members and patrons of this podcast and channel. If you're listening to this on YouTube, you can click join this channel to get extra episodes, author chats, mini courses, all kinds of fun extra perks. And of course, if you're listening to this on the podcast feed, you can join Patreon to get the same perks. Author chats, extra episodes, mini casts, mini courses, audio courses, all kinds of fun stuff. And that is at patreon.com/englandcast, patreon.com/englandcast. Or if you're listening to this on YouTube, just click join this channel. Thank you so much to all of you who support the podcast. I so very much appreciate you, and you help keep me on track and keep me doing this work. Thank you. Thank you. And also a reminder that we are in the middle of the Myth-Busting the Tudors Challenge. We are right in the midst of it, but you can still hop in and catch up on everything. You get lifetime access to everything. So you can hop in for $17 if you go to englandcast.com. There is a button in the top right-hand corner that says Myth-Busting the Tudors. And we have our final live call on Friday, the 29th. But of course, if you're listening to this after that, you can still just watch everything and get caught up and pop into the community and share with us what you are learning and want to learn, everything like that. So there's no deadline on learning. But if you want to participate live, go to englandcast.com and you'll see that Myth-Busting the Tudors link and you can just hop right in. All right, my friend. So let's get into it. Women's relationship with religion during this time was intricate and multifaceted. On one hand, we have figures like Catherine Parr, who was not only a queen, but also an author and a keen promoter of religious reform. Her contributions to religious discourse and her role in the education of Elizabeth I showcase the potential for women's active participation in religious and intellectual life. On the other hand, we encounter the tragic tale of Elizabeth Barton, the Maid of Kent, whose starkly different experience underlines the dangers faced by women who stepped too far into the religious limelight. Barton's outspoken prophecies and direct challenges to the king's authority ultimately led to her execution, illustrating the perilous tightrope the Tudor women had to walk when engaging with matters of faith and doctrine. These contrasting examples set the stage for our exploration today. As we navigate through the complexities of the Tudor period, we will uncover how the shifting religious landscape influenced women's opportunities for education and literacy, and how these in turn affected their roles within the evolving religious context of the time. Before the winds of the Protestant Reformation swept across England, reshaping its religious and educational landscape, the state of women's education and literacy was starkly different, particularly nuanced by social standings and the prevailing patriarchal norms. Education for women was just not a societal priority, and opportunities for learning were both limited and tightly bound within the walls of social class and convention. Convents and monasteries played a pivotal role in the educational landscape of the time, offering one of the few avenues through which women could receive any form of formal education. These religious institutions often provided a basic education focused on religious instruction, reading, possibly writing, primarily to those who were destined for a life within the church, or who came from families from certain social standings. For many women, especially those of noble birth, these institutions were the sole source of learning, offering a space for the acquisition of knowledge that was otherwise inaccessible in the wider male-dominated society. Amidst these constrained educational opportunities, there were women who sought knowledge and religious involvement, navigating the tightrope of societal expectations and personal aspirations. We talked last time about Eleanor Cobham, who wound up being accused as a witch. She is also making an appearance here. Her story is emblematic of the thirst for knowledge that existed even within the confines of social constraints. Eleanor was initially a lady in waiting. She later became Duchess of Gloucester. She found herself entangled in a web of political and religious intrigue, which ultimately led to her downfall. However, her early life and position within the court suggest an engagement with the intellectual and religious currents of her time, reflective of a broader, albeit subdued, desire among women to partake in the realms of education and religion. These individual stories of women like Eleanor shine a light on the currents of change that were beginning to stir. Women showed an interest in and a capability for learning and religious involvement. That's a surprise, right? Sorry. The pre-Reformation era, with its limited educational opportunities for women, set the stage for the dramatic changes that the Protestant Reformation would bring. The shifting religious landscape would open new doors for women's education and literacy, challenging the established norms and paving the way for a reimagined role of women in Tudor society. The seismic shift brought about by the Reformation under Henry VIII and Edward VI dramatically altered the educational landscape in Tudor England, particularly for women. The dissolution of the monasteries and the Act for the Advancement of True Religion were pivotal in reshaping the avenues through which education and literacy were disseminated across society. Henry VIII's fervent push for religious reform, marked by the break from Rome and the subsequent dissolution of the monasteries, convents, and religious houses, had profound implications for education. These institutions had been vital centers of learning and literacy, offering one of the few channels through which women, especially those of noble lineage, could receive an education. The closures stripped away these traditional bastions of female education, leaving a void that demanded to be filled by new forms of learning. The Reformation's impact on education was further compounded by the Act for the Advancement of True Religion, passed in 1543. This legislation ostensibly aimed at curbing the spread of heretical texts, paradoxically facilitated a broader engagement with religious texts by allowing the upper echelons of society, including women, to read the Bible in English, albeit in private. This legal concession marked a significant shift, subtly endorsing the notion that women of a certain social standing could and should engage with religious texts, thereby fostering a culture of literacy among at least a segment of the female population. The introduction of the English Bible was a watershed moment in the spread of literacy. The translation of the Bible into English by figures such as William Tyndale and its subsequent widespread dissemination, facilitated by the printing press, meant that scriptures were no longer tethered to the pulpit, accessible only through the mediation of the clergy. The vernacular Bible became a household item, a shared resource through which both men and women could engage with the Word of God directly. For women, this access was transformative, providing a legitimate avenue for reading and, by extension, learning. The closure of religious institutions and the spread of the English Bible were two sides of the same coin, reflecting the Reformation's complex impact on women's education and literacy. On the one hand, the dissolution of convents and monasteries eradicated traditional centers of female education. On the other, the push towards a more personal engagement with faith through the vernacular Bible opened new, albeit very limited, opportunities for literacy and learning among women. This period of religious upheaval was a double-edged sword for women's education then. It dismantled traditional structures while simultaneously laying the groundwork for a new paradigm of religious literacy, where women could, within the confines of their societal roles and restrictions, engage more directly with religious text. The Reformation set the stage for a nuanced evolution of women's education and literacy, characterized by both loss and opportunity as women navigated the changing tides of Tudor religious and intellectual life. The Tudor Reformation, a whirlwind of religious, political, and societal... The Tudor Reformation, a whirlwind of religious, political, and social upheaval, did not merely rewrite the theological script of England. It also redrew the boundaries of women's education, literacy, and religious expression. This period of transformation saw women like Joan Bocher and Anne Askew emerge not just as footnotes in history, but as pivotal figures whose stories shed light on the broader implications for women navigating the tumultuous waters of religious reform. Joan of Kent is how she is known. She was a fervent Protestant and an advocate for the English Bible. Her literacy empowered her to engage deeply with the theological debates of her time. However, her outspoken beliefs, particularly her denial of the doctrine of Christ's incarnation, placed her in direct conflict with the religious authorities of Edward VI's reign. Her case highlights the precarious position of women who dared to interpret and preach religious texts in a period where such actions were increasingly policed and punished. Joan's eventual execution for heresy in 1550 underlies the lethal risks faced by women who stepped beyond the acceptable boundaries of female religious expression. Similarly with Anne Askew, her story further illuminates the dangers for literate, religiously convicted women during the Reformation. Known for her eloquent defenses of her faith, she was a poet, we talked about that when we talked about women in the arts, we talked about her poetry. Her literacy allowed her to engage with and challenge the core tenets of Catholicism, advocating for the Protestant cause. This was during a period when Henry VIII was kind of shifting back towards more conservative beliefs and Stephen Gardiner was rising again, so things were becoming slightly more Catholic. And her refusal to recant her beliefs, even under torture, she's the only woman that we know for sure was ever tortured in the Tower, speaks to the courage and conviction of women who found themselves at odds with the shifting religious landscape. Askew's execution by burning in 1546, after being condemned as a heretic, serves as a stark reminder of the era's brutality and particularly the vulnerability of women who were literate and outspoken about their religious beliefs. So this period opened new avenues for literacy and religious participation, but it also introduced new dangers. Women's literacy, once a rare, often private affair, became both a tool for personal empowerment and a potential cause for suspicion. The ability to read and interpret religious texts independently threatened the patriarchal control over religious knowledge and was met with harsh resistance, particularly when it led to public expressions of dissenting beliefs. The Reformation's impact on women also extended beyond those like Anne Askew and Joan of Kent, who were directly persecuted for their beliefs. The closures of convents and monasteries, the centers of female education and religious life, disrupted the traditional paths of learning and spiritual practice for many women. This loss was compounded by the Act for the Advancement of True Religion, which restricted women's access to the English Bible, further limiting their ability to engage with their faith on their own terms. The Reformation did much more than just transform the religious and political landscape of Tudor England. It also redefined the role of women within the fabric of religious life. As the dust settled on this tumultuous period, the contours of a new religious order began to emerge that offered women both opportunities and challenges in their pursuit of spiritual fulfillment and expression. With the dissolution of the monasteries and the establishment of the Church of England, the traditional avenues for women's religious involvement underwent, of course, a profound transformation. The closure of convents, like we talked about, once vital centers for female piety, could have signaled a retreat from women's active participation in religious life. However, the very upheaval that shuttered these institutions also cracked open new doors for women's engagement with faith, albeit still within the restrictive bounds of a patriarchal society. The spread of the English Bible, propelled by the Reformation's emphasis on scripture as the cornerstone of faith, was a pivotal factor in expanding women's access to religious knowledge. The translation of sacred texts into the vernacular not only democratized religious knowledge, but also provided literate women with the tools to explore their faith more deeply. Women of various social standings found themselves able to engage directly with the Word of God, discuss theological matters, and in some cases even lead family devotions, a stark departure from the pre-Reformation era, where such activities were mediated by male religious authorities. This newfound access to religious texts spurred a quiet revolution in the domestic sphere, where the household became a site of religious instruction and discussion. And women, as the moral and spiritual custodians of the home, played a central role in shaping the religious consciousness of their families. This role was not without contradiction. While women could now more actively participate in shaping the religious life of their households, their engagement with broader theological debates and church leadership remained circumscribed by social norms that viewed women's public involvement in such matters with suspicion. The Reformation's focus on individual faith and conscience unwittingly provided a space for women to assert a more personal and direct relationship with the divine. This individualistic approach to spirituality, coupled with the Protestant valorization of marriage and motherhood as divine callings, subtly elevated the spiritual status of women, framing their domestic and maternal roles within a religious context. Yet these advances were not unequivocal gains. The patriarchal underpinnings of Tudor society ensured that women's increased involvement in religious life was still bounded by strictures that limited their autonomy and public voice. Women's engagement with religious texts and participation in household devotion were encouraged only insofar as they reinforced traditional gender roles and hierarchies. All of this left an indelible mark on women's education, literacy, and religious involvement. This period, fraught with its religious upheaval and the restructuring of societal norms, laid the groundwork for significant changes in the roles and perceptions of women within these spheres. Reflecting on this legacy, it's clear that the period was a harbinger of progress, yet it was also emblematic of the enduring constraints imposed by a patriarchal society. The Reformation, particularly under Henry and Elizabeth, catalyzed the burgeoning emphasis on literacy and education. The translation of the Bible into English, the encouragement of its widespread dissemination, underscored the importance of literacy, indirectly fostering an environment in which women's education could gain a foothold. Women like Catherine Parr, who were not only literate but also deeply involved in religious discourse, exemplify the advancements of the period. However, these strides were often circumscribed by gendered limitations, with education and literacy largely viewed through the lens of religious necessity rather than as intrinsic rights. The legacy of this period, in terms of religious involvement, is similarly nuanced. While the Reformation dismantled the traditional avenues of religious expression and involvement for women, like convents, it also inadvertently opened new spaces for women in the domestic and community religious spheres. This shift toward a more personal and interpretive engagement with faith allowed some women to carve out roles as religious educators within their families and communities, albeit still within the confines of societal expectations. However, the women like Joan of Kent and Anne Askew are reminders of the dangers faced by these women who stepped beyond the accepted boundaries of religious discourse. Their persecution underscores the limitations that persisted even as the Reformation ostensibly expanded the religious and intellectual horizons for women. So there we have it, my friends. We will leave it there, looking at women in education and religion. And I thank you so much for listening and for your support. If you'd like to discuss this further, please hop into the Tudor Learning Circle. It is the internet's only social network just for Tudor lovers. So tutorlearningcircle.com, you can create a profile and share your thoughts on this or anything related to Tudor history. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you again next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Blow, northern wind, send for baby's waiting. Blow, northern wind, blow, blow, blow. Ich hot a board in Bauerbrick, that solely semis on sich. Mensch, full maiden of mich, fair and fred.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.